Good afternoon. I'll call the meeting to order. This meeting will be held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. Roll call, Mr. Smith, please.
Chair Sundin is present. Vice Chair Vang?
Present.
Vang present. Anderson? Anderson? Burkle?
Present.
Burkle present. Eklund?
Present.
Eklund present. Hansen R?
Hansen R present.
Hansen R present. Hansen J?
Hansen J present.
Hansen J present. Cleavorn?
Cleavorn present.
Cleavorn present. Lippert excused. Lewick? Lewick? Miller?
Present.
Miller present. Nelson?
Present.
Nelson present. Thompson? We do have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Present.
Oh, Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Anderson here also. Anderson here also.
Missed you.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Anderson. What's your pleasure on the minutes?
I would move to approve them.
Okay. Any questions or corrections on those minutes of the previous meeting? Okay, hearing none, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the motion prevails, the minutes are adopted. We have four bills on the agenda today. We're going to adjust the agenda from the original posting to hear bills with presenters and non-committee members first. All the meeting material was posted in advance. We'll start with Vice Chair Vang, House File 847. To your bill. We have 15 minutes blocked for this, and then we'll lay it over. Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 847 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill. So this bill is simple. It would appropriate $200,000 a year from the general fund to the Minnesota Department of Ag for grants to the Nonprofit Center for Rural Policy and Development. This is up from $150,000 in the last appropriation for the center. So I'll just keep things brief and leave the rest of the testimony to my testifier, Julie Tesh, who can talk more about the center.
Okay, Julie Tesh, would you please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Yes, thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Vice Chairwoman Vang. For the record, my name is Julie Tesh, and I am President and CEO of the Center for Rural Policy and Development. I'm going to share my screen here. All right, there we go. So thank you again for having us here today. We're very appreciative to have you invite us today. Want to go over very quickly what the center is and what we do, because I know a lot of members are new on the committee, so just want to give you a quick overview. But like Representative Vang said, we are requesting $200,000 through the Department of Agriculture, and we are also requesting to be put back in the base budget. We were cut from the base budget last biennium, so that would be greatly appreciated to be put back in there. But very quickly to go through what we do, in 1997, a group was put together to create a rural policy research organization that would provide policymakers like yourself objective, unbiased, and politically unspun examination of today's rural issues. And so that, in a nutshell, is what we do. When people ask, what does the Center for Rural Policy and Development do? We do research. We provide research to decision makers like yourself, to commissioners for the Association of Minnesota Counties, League of Minnesota Cities, townships, everyone. We provide that unbiased, nonpartisan research so that you can make effective and good policy for your constituents. We have a board of 19 members. The majority of them, 15 of them, are appointed by the governor's office. And then we have three staff members. So again, just to go through what we do, because some people ask, like, you do research, what does that mean? So we take those complicated and complex issues. So childcare, actually, I just found out today, before we got on, the Star Tribune has an article about rural childcare and using our research as part of that article talking about childcare deserts. So we take those complicated and complex issues and present them in ways that give them meaning and relevance. So we know that you're not probably not going to sit and read a 15-page paper on childcare, but you might watch a webinar, you might listen to a podcast, you might look at our briefings to get that information. So our research is not designed to determine public policy, but instead to inform those of you making those decisions. So looking at it through a rural lens. We are a lean and mean organization. There's three of us. On the left is Kelly Ash. He is our research associate. He is in New London. Marnie Werner is our VP of Research and Operations in Mankato. And myself, I am on our family's farm near Waldorf, Minnesota, which is in rural Waseca County. And I apologize if my internet, it says internet is unstable. Broadband would be greatly appreciated in the whole grand scheme of things. To let you know about how our research agenda is put together, we don't just arbitrarily pick the topics. We rely on you, legislators, and other decision makers across the state to tell us what's going on in your areas. And for those of you that are urban legislators, we value your input as well, because we want to know, what are you curious about? What are you hearing about? What do you want to learn more about? So what we do is we take input from staff, we have a research committee that explores topics, and then decision makers like yourself. We put all those topics together, and we put together a survey. And you'll all be receiving that in about a month and a half. And we ask you to rank, you know, what's most important to you? What's most important that you're hearing about in your committees, in your areas? And then from there, we do our research agenda. And so we pick 4 to 6 topics per year. And our research year goes by our fiscal year, which is the same as the state, which is July 1st. So it really is, we go by what the survey says. 2 years ago, when I was here and then also in the Senate, people were asking us to do more than just research papers. How could we make it easier for people to get our research? And so I'm very happy to say that we've put together, you can see here, videos. We have a YouTube page. So the Center for Rural Policy and Development, you can go to our YouTube page. One of the videos we have produced is called Why is Healthcare Getting Harder to Access in Rural Minnesota? Another one is talking about cost of living in rural Minnesota. And then what is rural? And we also have one coming out here in the coming weeks on volunteer drivers and the need for volunteer drivers to medical appointments in rural areas. We also started a blog. We post blogs every 2 weeks, a couple topics, the need for mental health services in rural Minnesota, talking about rural unemployment. And then thinking back to a year ago when the pandemic started, we were able to be very nimble and do daily posts on COVID-19, just talking about different rural aspects of it. And then also our webinars. The pandemic has been difficult for everyone, but one of the bright spots for us is it has had us do webinars. And we've been very happy with the results. 2 weeks ago, we hosted a webinar on childcare in rural Minnesota. That is our latest research topic. And we had almost 200 people registered. And those are people from whether they're legislative committee, staff, deed, county commissioners, a whole gamut. And so those webinars are recorded, because I know several legislators asked if it would be recorded, if they could watch it again. And you can go to our YouTube channel, and our webinars are about an hour and a half long. So you can see here, we have childcare, what happens to the rural workforce during a pandemic, and then also the shifting landscape of rural healthcare. So we try to make everything as easy as possible for you to see. We also have a podcast called The Center of Everywhere. I try not to say I live in the middle of nowhere. We live in the center of everywhere, because living in rural, you do live in the center of everywhere. And you can see here some of the topics that we featured. We will be releasing a new podcast tomorrow. We do this every 2 weeks, a new podcast tomorrow talking about homelessness in rural Minnesota. And then, as I said before, we've been making the news quite often. You can see here whether it's talking about the pandemic, rural grocery stores, and then today the Star Tribune. with childcare. We work a lot with local newspapers. Just to quickly tell you about some of our latest research that you can find on our website at ruralmn.org. We have reports in the last year talking about rural healthcare. So integrating rural into the new reality of healthcare talks about rural access. We have our childcare report that was just released 2 weeks ago, and that's talking about childcare deserts. And then we also have how the pandemic paints a different employment picture in rural Minnesota, talking about workforce, and then transit for healthcare and talking about volunteer drivers. Some current projects that we have coming up is what is the potential impact on county budgets if the price of agricultural land falls? Talking about rural anchor businesses and the impacts of their closing. So those anchor businesses, whether it's a JCPenney, a Kmart, things like that. One that I'm especially excited about are the barriers between local and regional governments to rural immigrant and refugee populations. We are working with the Humphrey School of Public Affairs and with a group, they are working on the Capstone Project. And this is the topic they're covering, and we are working with them on that. And so our advisory team with them consists of members from the Minnesota Council of Latino Affairs, the Council for Asian Pacific Minnesotans, and the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. So we're excited about that. And then we also have some tax research we're working on. And then we are also working on the migration of rural high school graduates between Minnesota, South Dakota, North Dakota, and Iowa. And what does that look like when they graduate high school, maybe go to college? Do they come back to the state? What are they doing? So we're collaborating with the Department of Higher Ed, DEED, and the Department of Education on that. So that is just a very, very brief overview of the Center for Rural Policy and Development. Again, you can see our website there, ruralmn.org. And my email is there as well if you ever have any questions. And my staff and I are always happy to, if you have a specific question on one of these topics, we're happy, you know, to help you find those answers and answer those questions. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Representative Vang. Do you have any further testimony to offer?
No, Mr. Chair, that is all. I'm open to taking any questions.
Okay, any questions for the author of the bill from the committee? Okay, Representative Hansen, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Tesh. I have two questions. One is, I saw the comment about large retail impacts on property taxes, and you know, it used to be that the impact of Walmart moving into a community had ripple effects with small businesses, and now that's even been impacted. Walmarts are Kmarts, and now we have the Dollar General stores that are moving in and even knocking out those. So rather than the property tax impact, what's the impact of those dollar stores that I think export money out of the communities and then kill off some of the remaining small businesses? And then the second part is related, but you had a bullet point about effect of lowering land values. And it seems that as land values continue to be disproportionate to the value of the land, they continue to go up, that prices land out of reach. And so then you don't have people. You have large concentrations, just like the concentration of the retail, you get large concentrations of landowners, almost a feudal system where people can't get into the system unless they're born into it. So how do you deal with, I mean, I think there's more than just looking at the impacts on property taxes. There's the impacts on the culture and agriculture if land values or retail are concentrated with power.
A response, Julie Tesh?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, both are very good questions. The first one with the dollar stores, I will refer you to, and I'll answer it as well, but we just released a podcast 2 weeks ago with the University of Minnesota Extension talking specifically about dollar stores and how they impact small town grocers. And so I'm biased, but I think it's a really good podcast to listen to, and it goes into great detail that the survey that the University of Minnesota Extension did and they released just a few months ago shows that these grocers in towns of 2,500 population or less the grocers there, if they know that a Dollar General is coming in within a 15-mile radius of their town, they're either, one, not going to start a grocery store, or two, they know that they're going to probably go out of business. And so those dollar stores are, it's a double-edged sword. You know, I have a dollar store in Wells just south of me, and it is literally right next to the grocery store, the locally run grocery store. And so that, we could talk about that for hours. But then north of me in the town of Janesville, they do not have a grocery store, and that Dollar General serves as their grocery store. You know, so they can get milk and bread and eggs. Fruits and vegetables, probably not, but they're able at least to get that. So dollar stores, you know, their business plan is going into rural Minnesota, into these small towns. And so I encourage you to take a look at or listen to our podcast and look at the University of Minnesota Extension research. They have a wonderful, wonderful report on that. As far as land tax values, you know, it was interesting when we put our research agenda together last year, we weren't quite sure how things were going to go. And we had been requested to look at what if the market falls out under ag land, what would happen? And so we are actually looking at tweaking that now, because obviously it's not going down as much as maybe we thought it would. It's actually going up. And so right now, this is just the first piece talking about the tax value and how that incorporates into school funding and those things like that. And then we're hoping in the next agenda that we can start talking about that culture of how is the land being bought? Where is it from? How do new farmers get in the whole gamut? Again, we could talk about that for a long time, but that is definitely on our radar. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, would you go ahead with your questions? And I'll ask everybody to be concise today. We've got a busy schedule. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for Ms. Tasha. Yeah, you're certainly busy. The amount of information you put out with your webinars, YouTubes, and blogs is just amazing. I do just have to ask, though, for a lean and mean organization, your board is large, 19 members. How did that ever arrive at being so large to have a 19-member board?
Julie, Tasha.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson. Very good question. That is the way it was created in statute in 1997. And so we go by the statute, and it is very prescribed who we have on our board, whether it's rural regional development people, whether it's small business owners, Farm Bureau, Farmers Union, things like that. So it was prescribed in statute.
Representative Lewick, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question for the testifier. You mentioned there's concern about Dollar General, I guess Big Dollar, and their impact on local groceries. Did your look also include the local drug stores that are selling milk and bread and eggs? And did your look also look at the impact of all the kind of multi-service gas stations that have a couple of doors in their cooler for milk, eggs, and bread, and how that impacts the local grocery stores?
Julie Tesh.
Yep, Mr. Chair, Representative. That was a small part of the research that they did, but the presence of Casey's, Quick Trips, things like that are definitely making a huge impact on rural grocery stores. And I know that we're looking at how do we find those numbers to figure out that impact of what those stores are doing. So it is definitely on our radar.
Okay.
Thank you. I would suggest that that's a lot bigger impact than you may think. And they've been in place for quite some time. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. No one else has signed up to testify. So any closing comments before you renew your motion, Representative Vang?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just would like to ask the committee members for their support. And therefore, I renew my motion that House File 847 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Okay. Thank you, Vice Chair Vang and Ms. Tesh. House File 847 is laid over. Next up is House File 886. Representative Green, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for hearing my bill today.
Certainly, proceed.
I believe somebody in your committee might have to move that bill for me, sir.
Oh, I will move 886 with the intention of laying it over for possible inclusion.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. House File 886 is an idea that I had, and it came about because we hear a lot of talk about nitrogen levels and how much is the runoff that we have, how much is in the soil and the water. And I've been asking for a number of years how I can distinguish how much of that nitrogen is natural and how much is coming from other sources. And so what I did was I put together a bill, and I thought it would be a simple bill because the nitrogen and the rules that are affecting our ag community, I put it in the form of an ag bill. And it was supposed to be a simple bill just to get some testing on some state lands. But because I didn't specify where the areas were, they did a fiscal note that would have encompassed the whole state and all the state lands. And that would have not only been ridiculous, it would have been pretty costly. So, Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment to the bill to get it in the order that I would like.
Please offer your amendment, please.
Okay, the amendment is 821. And what the 821 amendment does, it specifies where the properties would be. There's three across the state that I think would be sufficient, and they're basically untouched lands. The one
okay,
is
okay. I'll move that 821 amendment.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. The first would be in what's called the Lost 40. It's a area in northern Minnesota, mostly in the northeast, I believe, but it's more central. And it's something that when they were mapping, they made some mistakes, and what was supposed to be a lake was actually a forest. And so it's a pine forest up there that's never been touched. And I thought that would be a really good place to check and see what the nitrogen levels are, not only in the soil, but also if there's any water nearby, they could check the runoff for nitrogen there. The other would be a little further south in Minnesota, and it would be in a state park. And if I pronounce this wrong, forgive me, but I think it's the Sakota Lake State Park. And this is a park that has a lot of hardwoods in it, and there's also some water there. And so that would be another opportunity to test and see what the nitrogen levels were. And then the other would be over in the southwest part of the state in the Blue Mounds Blue Mounds State Park area. And that would tell us what nitrogen levels might be coming off and being produced, I guess, in our prairie region. And we know that nitrogen comes from a lot of different sources, but one of the things it comes from is from rotting vegetation. And so what this does is this amendment would have a five-year plan for the Department of Ag to test these soils and this water and this runoff of these nutrients into the water. And they'd have to report back to the legislature once a year for those 5 years to give us an indication as to just what we can expect should there, if we were on untouched land. So that's the basics of the bill. I will stand for any questions.
Okay, discussion on the amendment first. Any discussion on that amendment? Okay, all those in favor of the 821 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. As amended, 886 is before us. Representative Green, anything further on the bill?
I think I've described it, Mr. Chair, so if there's any questions, I'll take them. Otherwise, I'm very thankful that you've agreed to lay the bill over.
Okay. Thank you very much. No one is signed up to testify, but Mr. Savory, will the amendment, will this amendment change the fiscal note? And are we going to get a, will we get one before we take final action?
Language from a court that is not present.
Mr. Chair and members, for the tape, Ken Savory, House Fiscal Staff. Yes, I believe that since the bill has been amended by the A21, it would require a new fiscal note. And since the committee seems to be acting in a way to lay the bill over, that would give the LBO and myself ample time, and the agency is required to complete that fiscal note. So we should have one in short order after the committee were to take action.
Okay, we'll be looking forward to seeing that. I guess, are there any closing comments, Representative Green, before I renew that motion?
No, I don't have any closing comments, Mr. Chair, but I think there are a couple of questions, it looks like, on my screen.
Okay, Representative Anderson, please.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I would support this bill. It's kind of interesting. There's long been discussions about nitrogen and the source of where it came from. And I especially like the amendment, which much more narrows the scope of the bill and is going to lower the cost. So I would support Representative Green's bill.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was actually going to say the same thing that Representative Anderson just said. I think having this data is really important. And so Representative Green, I would also be supportive.
Okay. Any further comments on the 886? Okay, I renew my motion that 886 be, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Agricultural Bill. With that, thank you, Representative Green.
Thank you.
886 is laid over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Okay. Next up today is we have House File 1631. It's a Representative Lippert bill. I understand Representative Vang will offer the bill.
Yes, Vang. Mr. Chair. I move that House File 1631 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative Vang. Any input on the bill, describing the bill?
No, Mr. Chair, I do have a testifier, Sam Ziegler, who will explain the crux of the bill and the testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Ziegler, please identify yourself and offer your testimony.
Sam Ziegler with Greenstein. Mr. Chair and members, good afternoon. My name is Sam Ziegler, and nice job, Vice Chair Vang, on guessing that. I want to thank you for the invitation to appear before you today and talk about what we have going on. Greenstein is a nonprofit organization founded in 2014 to establish our region as a world-class food and agribusiness epicenter and is a part of Greater Mankato Growth, Inc. At our core, we're focused on economic development, targeting the full agriculture supply chain, which consists of retaining and expanding existing businesses and the creation and attraction of new talent development and creating awareness to establish a brand destination for the ag industry cluster, like what we have, you might know nationally as Silicon Valley or in Minnesota, we have Destination Medical Center. We currently have guidance, insight, and action from 45 volunteers within the ag community, along with 33 businesses investing in our five-year plan of work. As I talked with Representative Lippert in preparation for this, he wanted me to share a few stories with you about the impact Greenstein is making on business creation, retention, talent development, and supporting ag-focused entrepreneurs. So I wanna share a few examples with you. Begin with Rebel Greens. You may have seen or tried their products in Hy-Vee or Cub Foods or other groceries, but they produce leafy baby greens in high-tech hydroponic greenhouse in Medford. Back when they were moving ahead with the expansion of their greenhouse, they ran into some challenges with some Minnesota farm laws and the structure of their business. And we were able to assist them through this process. As a result, they kept their project timeline on track. And this expansion did add 25 jobs and was multi-million dollar investment in rural Minnesota. and which in turn today produces high quality, nutritious food year round. Another element of Green Seam's work is with communities in the region to retain and expand ag businesses. A prime example includes assisting the city of Waseca with elements relating to a completely new ConAgra vegetable processing facility for the Bird's Eye brand. You may have recently heard about this. This project is a big deal. It was a $200 million investment in a smaller rural community that, if you don't know Waseca, had previously experienced some major job losses from other sectors in the recent years. Our role was to help run economic impact reports and provide data, useful data for the community in working with ConAgra to solidify their investments. And it's exciting to see right now the plant is currently being constructed and will open in 2022, which is the first new vegetable processing facility in the upper Midwest in many, many years. Regarding the support of entrepreneurs, we're currently working with several individuals on this, and I'm going to highlight a couple examples that include working with two students from right in Representative Lippert's backyard in St. Olaf College. The first one is Ian Roback. He's graduating in the spring. He's got a passion for water and the environment, and this has driven him to finding a solution to remove nitrates and phosphorus from the water in the ag landscapes. He's working out several of the details of his plan, and his plan is really focused on meeting MPCA's 30% nitrate reduction goal. And so we've been able to help connect him to some industry leaders in the work right now and work with him on his business plan to build that further out. And currently what we're looking for is searching for pilot sites and grant funding so he can take his design to the next level. The second is Marcus Helmkin, which is creating a business to recycle food waste and provide valuable nutrient-rich soil amendments to local farmers by diverting the food scraps in Minnetonka. And additionally, he's working on educating the community and instilling a sense of environmental stewardship in this work. And Green Seam's role is really to provide technical assistance and connections to resources supporting his business, more on the compost and the nutrient values of that work. One additional talent I mentioned earlier was talent, and I want to touch on this briefly, and it's a critical area of need for agriculture and rural Minnesota. There's many examples of the talent work we're doing, but just for today, I'm going to focus on one, and that's the Mankato Area Public Schools. If you're not familiar, is one of Southern Minnesota's largest districts with over 8,000 students. Mankato has a large ag sector, businesses. However, 25 years ago, the ag programs and classrooms disappeared from the district. So over the years, Green Seam has illustrated the importance of ag and its impact and worked with educators to bring ag programs and classes back to the district and community. It is truly incredible to share the first results with you. So the very first year, which was this last year, there were 40 students enrolled. And currently this year, now there's over 400 students enrolled to these programs. So it's been an amazing ride. Additionally, Green Seam has helped raise some funds and leverage grant funding to construct a greenhouse this spring at one of the high schools to further invest in agriculture education experiences. So our work just continues. I'd like to share more examples in the talent work, but in essence of time here, I'll keep going. One question I often get is about how we have used and how we're planning to use the future dollars from the state of Minnesota. The investment is be used to activate and expand our support of business growth, talent development, and marketing our state as an ag industry cluster. We invest many hours of time to mentor and provide expertise to entrepreneurs and businesses to increase their odds of success. We continue to enhance the ability for people to connect with businesses who are in the region by building out a robust business directory, which today we have over 1,000 businesses listed. And we have access to data resource tools to be able to assist these communities and businesses with information to allow them to make their best decisions. And we're advocating for businesses to ag business to invest in Minnesota, which currently aren't, which are part of this supply chain. Currently, we're in conversations with Department of Employment, Economic Development, Foreign Direct Investment Team, and planning for a Select USA event later this year. In conclusion, GreenSeam is dedicated to ensure that agriculture will fuel our growth in Minnesota and committed to developing this region to be known nationally and internationally as a place for talent, business, and innovation and education related to ag. So thank you for allowing me to present on behalf of GreenSeam today and your consideration of regarding this investment in agriculture and economic development. I do want to note there are a couple supplement materials that were in your materials today showcasing the work and the impact of GreenSeam. So with that, conclude my comments and welcome any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ziegler. Representative Vang, let's open it up to questions from the committee for the author or Mr. Ziegler. Okay, seeing none, Representative Vang, what's your pleasure?
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion for House File 1631 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Okay, hearing that, House File 1631 is laid over. Our last bill today is House File 1137, Representative Chair Hansen. Is a bill regarding the Board of Animal Health. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that House File 1137 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Do you have an amendment you want to add on first?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the A1 amendment to 1137. The A1 amendment describes the process for staggering terms of members of the Board of Animal Health.
Okay, any discussion on that? Okay, all those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Say nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. House File 1137 as amended as before us. Representative Hansen, please present your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1137 as amended is a needed reform to the Board of Animal Health. The Minnesota Board of Animal Health has not changed very much over time, but our state has changed dramatically. Recently, in the last, I'd say 6 to 10 years ago, there was a change by adding the dog and cat breeders regulation into the Board of Animal Health. But the Board of Animal Health, as it is now, is a 5-member board. We had previously heard Chair Sundin's bill on adding a tribal member. This would add make the board 2 at-large members with 7 regional members. And the reason for 7 regional members, why I picked 7, is I'm anticipating that after the census and reapportionment, we would have 7 congressional districts rather than 8. I wish we would have 8, but I think it's going to be 7. So it would be a 9-member board, and that the board should achieve gender balance among the board membership where practicable. The members must be knowledgeable in animal agricultural, animal health, or pets and companion animals with at least 2 members who represent the public and are not included in agriculture, employed in agriculture, veterinary medicine, or the pet industry, or related field. The other thing the bill does is currently you have the College of Vet Medicine and the director of the diagnostic lab may serve as consultants to the board without a vote. This would say shall. And then finally, it would have the governor appoint the veterinarian licensed in Minnesota who is not a member to be its executive director. So instead of the board electing the executive director, there would be line authority to the governor where the executive director would report to the governor. So that is the reason for the reform. Why am I doing this? Members, it is time for a change. Our state has changed and there are new responsibilities. Earlier with the bills, it was referenced a pattern that is in Minnesota law, and that is naming positions on boards for specific organizations or specific fields or specific occupations or specific affinities. Minnesota state government works for all Minnesotans, not just the regulated clientele. It's important to have regulated clientele's expertise on the board, but that's not the sole purpose. The purpose is to represent and to protect and serve Minnesotans. And so that's why I'm for you, before you here with this reform of the Board of Animal Health. I know that change is hard. I know that people will oppose this. I've heard from groups, I've heard from individuals, and I've heard from members of the committee of why should we change? And the answer is why not? Why not try to make things better? For those groups who feel threatened that if there are additional members on the board, I'm saying that it will, to have a more diverse board and a larger board that represents all Minnesotans will make the outcome of your decisions stronger. That diversity is strength, and adding people onto the board provides strength, not weakness. It doesn't weaken your position, it adds to it. The amendment that we were adopted provides the opportunity so there isn't dramatic change to the board, that it's staggered over time, so that there's the opportunity for learning. The board as it's constituted, the world of agriculture when I grew up, or many members who grew up, is very different. We don't have as many veterinarians that are dealing with large livestock that travel around like in the television program, The Amazing Dr. Pohl. There's not that many Amazing Dr. Pohls left. But there are a lot of veterinarians that deal with dogs and cats and other pets. There's a lot. And they need a voice on there. One voice as a veterinarian is an improvement. But I think having a broader, more diverse board helps serve Minnesotans more. And I would ask for your support.
In addition to the written testimony submitted by the Minnesota Deer Farmers Association, we had one person sign up to testify, Amy Cordry, farmer and member of the CWD Rulemaking Advisory Group. Amy Cordry, please.
Mr. Chair, this is Nancy. Ms. Cordry had to withdraw her testimony.
Thank you very much. That's the second time I've heard that, and now I'm going to remember it. So, any questions or discussions from the members for Representative Hansen, Chair Hansen? I see Paul Anderson, Representative Anderson again.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen. Appreciate hearing about your bill. And I know this has been talked about for a number of years, a long time, and there's some concerns. But it seems to me your overall reason for doing this is to make a change because it hasn't been changed in a long time. And change for just change's sake, I'm not sure is the correct way to proceed on this. Board of Animal Health has been extremely important to production agriculture, livestock agriculture in the state. And it's worked well to this point. I think it would continue to fulfill that same role. So I'm just concerned about this change that you've put forward. Yes, it does stagger terms and things like that, but I guess I would have concerns about it, and I would like to visit more with you. But as of right now, I'm not so sure I could support your bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we have Representative Lewick, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I have. Several questions. I'm curious the author of the bill could explain why he felt it necessary to direct the governor to achieve gender balance when he already has the authority to appoint members to that the existing board. Do you have some issue with, I believe right now we have one female and four males on the current board, but is there some past issue this governor or Governor Dayton as with respect to an imbalance there that was not based on anything other than qualification?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lewick. I think it's important to try to achieve gender balance. I think that traditionally there has been on all boards and commissions a tendency throughout many governors to just continue kind of with the status quo, and providing for gender balance brings, where practicable, where practicable, provides for other voices at the table. I think it's also important to try to look at equity. I did not write that in, but I think it's important to provide perspectives and to make some changes. It adds a different, it adds different experiences to it. And if I could, Mr. Chair, just respond to the previous question, you know, this is not being proposed as change for change sake. It is being proposed for reform. The Board of Animal Health may be doing very good for some segments of agriculture, but it has responsibility beyond agriculture. And a significant responsibility was added several years ago in the pet world. And there are pet diseases that can jump into humans. And so trying to make sure we have that broad experience. And by having the gender balance where practical helps bring a variety of perspective to the board, which I think will help improve.
Thank you. Is there a follow-up, Representative Lewick?
Oh, yes, sir. I certainly do, Chair Sundin. I guess, and this is just a bit of information, I'm sure all the committee members have studied the Board of Animal Health's makeup in great detail, and I'm sure you're all aware that if you look at the 10 major programs or divisions or however you want to call it within that organization, you'll find that those senior division chiefs, or whatever you want to call them, happen to be female. And there are four males involved in there. So, and the current board has a lot to do with hiring practices within that agency. I guess the other thing is, quite quickly to the author, this business of having the governor appoint instead of the board hire, in, you know, historically, the board hires best qualified as the state veterinarian, and that person tends to stay in that job until they've either screwed up and been fired or retired. I have great concern of governors coming in and out and turning this into, we're going to appoint a new chief veterinarian for the state. It takes years to build the kind of knowledge that most people would be looking for to have such a broad and complicated job. In fact, you look at most of these vets come up through that world that have been in that position. So you really think we want to take a chance on making this a simply a political appointment?
Chair Hansen, response?
Mr. Chair and Representative Lewick, I actually think that it would help the board to have line authority to the governor's office. That when the boards are operating independently, they may be forgotten in terms of budgeting or expertise until a crisis emerges. And Representative Luke, I think you were here, and I think Representative Miller, when we went through the high path avian influenza, we were lucky there because we had federal money that came in to help resolve that. Without that federal money, I don't think is there as much anymore. And so having that direct authority, that line authority, I think is important for accountability.
Well, yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was definitely there here on the aid committee for that. And I was also, had a fairly lengthy history, dealing and working with the Board of Animal Health. And, so that the folks that are not aware how this works, when you have a large, disease like this, it isn't a question of the federal government is involved with that. And the funding has nothing to do with the line authority between the state's chief veterinarian and the Board of Animal Health. That's all in very clear federal statute. So I just want to make sure that those that are not familiar with that don't draw some assumptions on what the author just said about where those dollars come from and why. I guess the other one is, it looks to me as I read through this, and maybe the author can help me out here, It looks like there's no requirement that any veterinarian serve on this 9-member board. Is that true? I don't see where there's a prescriptive element that would require the governor to actually appoint a veterinarian. Maybe the author could expound on why that is.
Chair Hansen, please.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lewick, it says members must be knowledgeable in animal agriculture, animal health, or pets and companion animals. I take that, and that is my intent, that that includes veterinarians.
Representative Lewick.
I would rather see it much more prescriptive, since when we get into an animal disease issue, again, for those that have not went through that nightmare, whether it be avian, tuberculosis, or a variety of other diseases, those frontline people with the expertise, they're all veterinarians out there with veterinary technicians. And so I would certainly, as right now, two of the five people on that board are required to be veterinarians. So again, I can't support this bill at all, because I think it's an effort to make change with no good cause and no good reason and not well thought out. I think you're basically going to kick the can over on something that's been extremely successful in protecting both the health of Minnesotans as far as their food, as well as the agriculture. With that all, I see there's many others that certainly probably have questions and comments. So again, I think this is really turning this into something other than a very focused agency that is out there and has done a darn good job overall in protecting food sources for people in Minnesota. Thank you.
Chair Hansen, do you have any response to those comments?
I think that people see things from their perspective. And if you believe the board is doing good, you probably haven't had the perspective of people who don't believe there's been a good response to the chronic wasting disease. I think it's at least 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, that there was a legislative audit on this that recommended adding just one person to the Board of Animal Health, and nothing was done. The board will not reform itself.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Representative Burkle, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I won't take a lot of time. I concur with Representative Anderson and Representative Lewick's statements. And just as someone, I can testify as someone who's lived through an avian influenza epidemic and actually worked with the Board of Animal Health, that I'd be disappointed to see us not follow the science in this and politicize an agency that's doing a very good job. So I'm not going to go on and on. I really don't have any questions, but I can't support the bill as it stands. Not sure how gender inclusion changes anything with chronic wasting disease, but if we want to talk about that, it'd be imperative that veterinarians are included. I would agree with Representative Lewick's statement that it needs to be much more prescriptive, and I would just say that the Board of Animal Health, as it stands, is following its mission statement and doing what's necessary to protect animal health and our food industry in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Burkle. Representative Chair Hansen, would you like to respond to that?
If there's other questions, I can take those, and then I'll just do a close.
I don't see any other hands up, so Chair Hansen, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I want to address the particular issue about laning appointments, because Minnesota has had an increasing experience of laning appointments being very prescriptive of who should be on the board. That, I believe, leads to a concept called regulatory capture. Regulatory capture is a economic theory where regulatory agencies do the work of the regulated rather than the public. And when your boards and your commissions are made up of solely the regulated clientele, or the regulated clientele affected, then you have a very defined and narrow perspective. What I'm trying to do here is provide that flexibility and still have that expertise, but bring additional expertise into the Board of Animal Health. It's not just about CWD and deer farming. It's not just about dogs and cats. It's different now where we have a variety of diseases that move very quickly. We are living in a pandemic right now. And look what we've had to do. So with diseases that move through livestock or pets, we have to have that ability to move and to understand and have the diversity of opinion that leads to a good outcome for Minnesota for the future. I would renew my motion to lay over House File 1137 as amended.
Okay, thank you, Representative Hansen. House File 1137 as amended is laid over. Thanks everyone for your participation. On Wednesday, we're gonna hear from the university about agree, and then we'll take up two bills. So this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.